Over the last 10 months or so, many of our social interactions have been restricted, and the ways we usually maintain and develop our personal and professional networks in person became public health hazards. We're going to take a look at how networks and individuals within those networks have been impacted by the pandemic and how we could strengthen our networks during this time and hopefully beyond. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How have your personal or professional networks been impacted over the last year? Have you felt more disconnected, more lonely, or what ways have you found to stay in touch with those closest to you, maybe even with those acquaintances you still like? Maybe they're not your best friends, but you like to be in touch. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Marissa King is a professor of organizational behavior at the Yale School of Management. Her new book, out tomorrow, is called Social Chemistry: Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection. Marissa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, before we get into how the pandemic affected our connections and networks, I want to talk about the value of our contacts in general. I think people might hear the word network and think about networking, which for a lot of people feels like kind of a dirty word. How do you distinguish the two?
Yeah, if we think about the difference between the two, our networks are really the traces of interaction that we accumulate on a day-to-day basis. It's the person you bumped into when you were going out for a coffee, the more enduring relationships that you have with your friends and family. And your network are really the traces of those interactions, and it creates a map. And that map gives you a sense of where you've been in the past, but also your future, how creative you're likely to be, how healthy you are, your longevity, your success at work. And those networks are just patterns of interactions. But when we think about networking, it's actually quite different. And when we think about networking, we often have an idea in mind that we're going to use a relationship to get something out of it. And what we know from a long line of research is that networking truly does make us feel dirty. And experiments that have asked people to think about different types of interactions, when people are asked to recall an interaction, when they went somewhere to meet someone for a professional reason to try to get something out of it, they're twice as likely to recall a cleansing word. For instance, if you showed them W blank SH, they're twice as likely to think of wash rather than wish. So while we have an aversion to the idea of networking, it's really because we hold our relationships quite sacred. So the idea of being purposeful about them just creates this sense of moral disease. But in reality, if we think about our networks are just our interactions. And those interactions and the shapes and forms they take have extraordinary implications for every domain of our lives.
And you make the case that even if we don't think of it as networking and this instrumental thing, those relationships you're talking about in our actual networks, they're worth doing some work and thinking about. Talk about why we should pay attention to building and maintaining those networks.
The shape and the structure and the quality of our interactions have profound implications for a wide variety of different domains. So while we oftentimes have this aversion to the idea of networking, your network has inherent value in it. And we know from close to three decades of research in the certain social sciences, there are really three different types of network configurations. Some people are an expansionist. They have extraordinarily large networks. That gives them a lot of power and a lot of influence. Other people tend to be brokers. They're straddling different social worlds. They're able to bring together people and ideas that normally wouldn't talk together. As a result, they're really creative. They're really innovative. A third type of network is called a convening network. In those types of networks, your friends tend to be friends with one another. Conveners typically have lived in the same place for a long time, stayed at the same job. And those networks have a lot of trust, a lot of reciprocity. Conveners have fared very well during the pandemic in terms of loneliness and social support. So understanding the patterns that your relationships take has really important implications, both for your ability to be creative, get ahead of work, but also your health and social well-being.
And that points me towards something I took away from your book, that one size doesn't fit all. If one person has just a few close friends, and that person over there, the other person has a huge network of, you know, lots of maybe less close friends. You know, one of them isn't doing it right and one of them isn't doing it wrong. They just have their own style of contact building. How can we make sure we're not judging ourselves on somebody else's standards?
Yeah, I think that that's one of the biggest misconceptions. And it's something that I also fell victim to. That it, when I was starting out my career, I was told it again and again, you know, you've got to get out there, you've got to network, you've got to meet new people. And I think we're often told that it's the number of people that matter. It's the size of your network. A bigger network is a better network. But everything we know from research and social science is it's not the size of your network that matters. For the vast majority of outcomes we care about, a lot of other factors matter much more. And I think we focus on size because it's one of the easiest things to measure. But by starting to understand your own network's signature and what that means, it's a much more valuable approach for thinking about both you and how you navigate the social world, but also the other people within your network as well.
Talking to Marissa King, her new book is called Social Chemistry, Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection. We're talking about our networks of friends and professional relationships as well, how we can build and maintain them, why it's worth it, our different styles of doing it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you that person who knows everybody and likes to have lots of contacts and friends? Are you the person who brings other people together and builds connections for other people? What is your style? How have your friendships, your relationships been affected during the pandemic? Join in at 800-642-1234. Marissa, you started this book before I think we'd heard about COVID-19 at all. What have you seen? I know you've done some research on how this has affected our relationships, our feelings of loneliness. What kind of changes are you seeing?
My colleagues and I have studied hundreds of networks, and we studied those prior to the pandemic, and then we looked at them in June in the midst of social lockdown. And we've seen two key changes. One of the biggest changes we've seen is that there's been a shrinkage in the size of the average network. And on average, our networks have shrunk by close to 17%. But what's really interesting about that shrinkage is it's almost entirely due to the reduction in the size of men's networks. So men's networks have shrunk by close to 30%. They've lost 30% of their acquaintances, but women's networks have hardly shrank at all.
Why? That's huge.
It's a huge finding, and it's really surprising, particularly if you think about the challenges that so many women are facing during this time, trying to manage home lives and careers, and they're just simply starved for time. And I think that finding is really important because it highlights one of the biggest misconceptions that people have about building a network or developing a network is that investing more time is the answer. And what I think we can learn from how women have fared during the pandemic is that simply investing more time in building and maintaining relationships doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a stronger network. Instead, the difference in part lies because men and women fundamentally maintain their relationships in different ways. Research by Robin Dunbar has found that men tend to maintain their social interactions by doing things together. So men prefer, for instance, to go and, I don't know, play sports, or they go bowling, or they go to the bar together. And that's how they maintain their relationships. Women, on the other hand, tend to maintain their ties and social connection through conversation. And their ability to continue those conversations hasn't been impeded by the pandemic in the same ways that men have. And so if we're thinking about, well, what does this mean? The first is that it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody needs to spend more time in order to help guard against network shrinkage. Instead, it's being more thoughtful about the ways that we're spending time. And arguably, being in one-on-one conversation with another person, particularly actually through voice-only conversation, is one of the best ways of maintaining our social relationships, particularly during this time when we can't be together face-to-face.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Reggie with us in Oshkosh. Reggie, hi.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I used to have all the friends, and I couldn't depend on a single one of them. And now I have a couple of really good friends I can always depend on. So I kind of swung from one side to the other.
And I want to ask you, Reggie, did you make a conscious decision to be like, yeah, I don't need all these friends who, you know, aren't close friends. I'm going to pick the ones I want to maintain this relationship, or did it just kind of happen?
I kind of had to do a hard reset and just cut out everybody and then restart and build it back up to a comfortable level, which is now like four really good tight friends.
Reggie, thank you so much for sharing that. That brings up so many things you write about, Marissa. Let's talk first about Reggie's conscious decision to go kind of switch his network style from lots of people, but he didn't feel like he could depend on them, to that smaller core group of super friends.
Yeah, the decision Reggie made is actually one that highlights the importance of really thinking carefully about what you need within your network. Regardless of who you are, you're forced with a trade-off, because we all have a fixed amount of time to invest in our relationships. We actually have to make a decision, either consciously or unconsciously, about how we're going to invest that time. So you can, one extreme is to have a network full of lots of connections. As he said, I knew everybody. But if that's true, if you know a lot of people, the depth of those interactions is necessarily going to be quite thin, just simply because you can't spend enough time to really develop and maintain strong, deep social relationships. So they're one of the biggest trade-offs we have to make when thinking about our networks is, do we want to know a lot of people but not know them that well? Or are we going to concentrate on a smaller group of core individuals and have a deeper relationship and a deeper connection with those few individuals? And this is a decision we're all faced with because of this constraint of time. But one of the interesting things is how rarely people actually reflect upon what their network looks like. And if you're not conscious in this, right, your network just kind of happens. It's an accident. But it's arguably one of the most important resources you have, both from at a personal level and on a professional level. So taking the steps that Reggie took and being really conscious about how are you going to allocate that time in order to get what you need out of your network is really, really important. Otherwise, it's just your network's just kind of an accident.
Reggie, thanks a lot for sharing that story. We're talking to Professor Marissa King from the Yale School of Management. Her new book is called Social Chemistry: Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection. We're talking about how we connect with people and how it's maybe changing during the pandemic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What is your story? Do you like to have lots and lots of friends and or acquaintances? Do you focus on a few strong relationships, a little bit of both? Are you the one who connects other people together? Hey, you should know so-and-so. How have things changed during the pandemic in the ways you relate to people? Has it made it harder to keep those connections lively? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Marissa King. Her new book is called Social Chemistry: Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection. We're talking about our personal and professional networks, how we build them, the different patterns they take, how we keep them up, and how we keep them up during a pandemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your story or your question for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to our callers now. Troy is with us in Muskego. Troy, hello.
Hello. Yeah, I just, during the pandemic, it just, I'm a guy, and, you know, it gave me a lot of time to reflect. And there's a lot going on politically, and not just politically, but just with relationships. And I noticed there was some things that I did that I don't normally do, which was, you know, I'll give you two examples. One is like, I wanted to go over to my sister's for Thanksgiving, but they were like, they weren't social distancing. They weren't doing the mask thing. So I was kind of like, so we got into it. And, but then I later on called her up and just told her, you know, I love you and I care about you. And I kind of went above all that stuff. And I had like a friend also that I was estranged over something, you know, you thought about it and you're like, that's kind of petty. Like I reached out to him, like it's been like 5 years since I talked to him. And I said, hey, you know, just wanted to see how you're doing, see if you're healthy, everything's going good. And, you know, I'm thinking about you and I hope the best for you. And I did a lot of stuff like that where I kind of went, I realized a lot of stuff was kind of petty. So I revamped those relationships.
Troy, wow, what a story. Thank you for sharing that, Marissa. Taking this tough time to reevaluate, consciously reevaluate those connections lost and say, hey, maybe it's time to reach out and rebuild them. What do you think?
Yeah, Troy's story is such an important one. I think it's one of the few silver linings of the pandemic that by being forced to be socially distanced, in many ways, we've actually come to realize just how important and how valuable our relationships are. And arguably one of the best things that you can do in terms of social connection and social relationships is reaching out to people within your network that you haven't been in touch with recently. This is in the research, we call this dormant ties. So people you haven't been in touch with in 2 or 3 years. And oftentimes when we would ask people to do these types of exercises pre-pandemic, there was a lot of resistance. And it makes sense, right? People would say, like, why would I reach out to them? I haven't spoken to them in a long time. It's going to be awkward. I'm not sure how that's going to feel. Like, what would I possibly say? But what we know from a large body of research is that our relationships actually hold a lot of trust over a long period of time. And that if you can get over that initial awkward moment and simply reach out, the trust and all the positive aspects of those relationships often remain, and all the petty stuff falls to the side. And that really means that there's a lot of extraordinary untapped value within your existing network. And all you have to do is simply to reach out. And right now, because people are doing this more and more often, a lot of those barriers of, like, that's just going to feel awkward, are they're lower. And I think that also, if you can just take a moment and think about it from the other person's perspective, like, right now, we're all so starved for social connection. The idea of if someone, an old friend, reaches out to you, every time I've gotten a call like that, I've been so excited. And we just pick up. And I think that that's a gift that this time has given us, is the opportunity to reconnect and repair relationships and really to tap into our existing network in a way that historically has been difficult and awkward to do.
Thanks a lot for that call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Suzanne now in Hartford. Suzanne, hi.
Hi there. I was calling to talk about kind of the modeling that my mother did for me in terms of friendship and long-term relationships. She worked at numerous office settings in her 20s, 30s, and early 40s before she and my father married. And at that time, she moved into the farm in a rural area. But from each of those work settings, she had friends and friendships that continued on throughout her life until she passed away in her early 80s. They didn't talk to one another often. They might have seen one another a couple times a year, but they exchanged letters. And I can tell you their names now, and I'm 70 years old. That's how long ago those connections were, but how strong they were for my mother and how I recognized the value of those long-term relationships for her.
Suzanne, thanks for sharing that. And Marissa, it doesn't necessarily take a lot, a couple letters a year or maybe a text at a key moment during a Packer game, as I did last night to an old friend. That's the kind of maintenance that can keep those relationships going.
It doesn't take much because our relationships, they want to thrive and they want to survive. But what's unfortunate is actually for most people that they don't make that small investment. So our networks actually are largest when we're 25 and they continue to shrink over time. And the consequence of that is actually that you are seeing an epidemic of loneliness, particularly in older adults. And what I loved about the story that Suzanne was sharing about her mother is talking about her when she was in her 80s, that those relationships were still there. And that requires this active maintenance and development over time, and it doesn't take much, but the payoffs are enormous in terms of our psychological well-being and also our longevity. We actually live longer if we're in these fulfilling social relationships. So those small investments and that just ability to reconnect is particularly important the older you get, because through life changes, our networks naturally tend to get smaller and smaller. But by making those investments through moves, through having kids, through changing jobs, just reaching out simply during the Packers game or just say, hey, I thought of you, it's going to have enormous rewards, not for only for you, but also for everyone in your community.
Suzanne, thanks for the call. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, acquaintances, people a little more on the outer circle. We think a lot about, oh, close friends, they're really important. We get a lot out of that outer ring, even if they're, you know, not the person we call when, you know, there's a critical life decision to be made. Can you talk about that, I guess, ring of our network?
Sure. If we think about our innermost circle, our closest friends and our closest family, those are the 2 to 5 people that you turn to for social support. And that's really important for your health, happiness, emotional well-being, and longevity. But this outer ring of acquaintances, and this is usually in the range of like 600 to 1500 people that you would know by sight, but you may not contact on a regular basis. Those acquaintances are extraordinarily important because that's where your new information and innovation come from. If you're looking for a job, for instance, you're most likely to find a job not through a close connection, but actually through acquaintance or a friend of a friend. And that's simply because our acquaintances or our weaker relationships have new information because they're not in this echo chamber that exists in our inner circle. The people we talk to on a daily basis, we tend to think alike already, but then once we have conversations, we tend to think more and more alike. So this innovation and creativity really comes from acquaintances because they have new ideas and new information. And that's extraordinarily important, both for getting a job, for rates of promotion, mobility, but also just creativity and innovation as well.
Briefly, in our last few moments, Marissa, can you leave us with maybe a New Year's bit of advice on attending to our network?
The biggest thing to remember is there's already extraordinary untapped value within your network. But in order to tap into that, you need to be conscious and develop a pattern of ways of doing this. So if you can even just take 10 minutes on a Friday, call it Fun Friday, and reach out to three people that you haven't talked to in 3 years or more, you're going to benefit your own well-being, but you're also going to provide a benefit to the other people in your network because we are all so starved for social connection, particularly at this moment in time. So do yourself a favor, but also reach out and do a favor for those friends that you may not have seen in a while.
Marissa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Marissa King is professor of organizational behavior at the Yale School of Management. We talked with her about her new book called Social Chemistry, Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection.